This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Eddie Mair.
If you're just joining us, you've missed quite a bit. Kamala Harris, the first African-American, first Asian-American, and first woman vice president, has taken the oath of office.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
That I will well and faithfully discharge.
That I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
The duties of the office upon which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
And then a few moments later, just before 5 o'clock here in the UK, Joe Biden was sworn in.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
Office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Thank President. You.
And then when he began his inauguration address, Joe Biden emphasized the importance of the preservation of democracy.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day. A day of history and hope. Of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people, has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious, democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
He said, this is America's day, this is democracy's day, and you know what, it's also Simon Marks's American day. Simon, what are your thoughts?
Well, Eddie, I mean, I think that that speech by Joe Biden was a moment of reckoning for the country. It went much further than he could have gone. He could simply have said, I'm here to lead the country on behalf of all Americans. We need to once again underscore that we are the United States of America, as he said time and again over the last several months. And indeed, there were elements of that within the speech. But this was also a moment when an inauguration address was warts and all in terms of the presentation that he made to the American public, specifically to the domestic audience, saying that politics doesn't have to be a raging fire where every disagreement leads to total war. We must reject a culture in which facts are manipulated and manufactured. At one point in the speech, he said, we protect the nation by defending the truth and defeating the lies. This was an absolute repudiation of 4 years of frenzy in which the United States has been kept on the watch of the man whose name he did not refer to during the course of that speech. Not a reference, not even a glancing reference to Donald Trump and the administration that he has led. An attempt, I think, by Joe Biden to say to the country very directly, we've got some issues to resolve here that go beyond simply forging a national response to COVID-19, that go beyond finding a way of putting America's economy back on the path to economic security and prosperity. We've now got a fundamental national security challenge. It was at the 3.5 minute mark in that speech that he first mentioned climate change, which shows you the priority that that's going to take in his administration. And then he moved immediately to talking directly and openly about what he called political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, and absolutely insisted that the United States will defeat those elements that have been unleashed in American society as a result of Donald Trump mainstreaming conspiracy theorists, some of them violent, who at this very moment, 2 weeks ago, Eddie, were smashing their way into the U.S. Capitol building, looking for Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, and threatening to execute them on those very grounds where we've watched this ceremony and listened to this ceremony play out over the last 90 minutes or so. There was a gallows erected 2 weeks ago, a vivid threat to execute, hang Pence, they were screaming as they charged into the building. So you can't overstate the symbolism and importance of the fact that this ceremony went ahead outdoors in front of the Capitol building at a time when some voices here were saying that it was too dangerous to do that. 20,000 troops on the streets, some members of Congress, according to ABC News today, wearing body armor beneath their winter coats as they observed and participated in that inaugural ceremony. And, you know, for all the absolutely inspirational moments, the singing of the national anthem by Lady Gaga, the performance by Jennifer Lopez, the extraordinary poem by Amanda Gorman saying a nation that isn't broken but simply unfinished of the United States, it is the fact that that speech absolutely baldly insisted that this country has got monumental domestic polarized issues to resolve that in many ways are now going to be the task of Joe Biden's lifetime as he tries to come to grips with that. There was, of course, also an element of the speech directed at the wider world. America has been tested and has come out stronger for it. We're going to re-engage in alliances. We know that later today he's signing executive orders to take the United States back into the Paris Climate Change Accords, to terminate Donald Trump's suspension of America's membership of the World Health Organization. He's going to sign a national mandate ordering the wearing of face masks on all federal government properties and by all federal government employees. That is as far as he has the legal authority to go in terms of urging Americans across the country to don face masks, as he's asked them to do for the first 100 days of his presidency. He spoke on an international scale of the United States once again leading by the power of its example, becoming a trusted partner for peace. But he also acknowledged in that section of the speech that he knows that you can't simply walk into a gathering of world leaders and say, America is back, and expect them to say, oh, terrific, that's fantastic, welcome back, let's get on with it. Because they all know, as Joe Biden indicated in his speech, that there are millions of Americans out there who believe Donald Trump's lies about the election being rigged, don't believe that Joe Biden is a legitimate president of the United States, and today may be far more interested in the reports that Donald Trump is thinking of setting up his own political party called the Patriot Party than they will have been in the inauguration of Joe Biden. So I think in many ways it was very important for him to level with the American public. I mean, in historical terms, without drawing any comparisons whatsoever between Donald Trump and Joseph Stalin, because those comparisons clearly do not exist, I thought in some ways this speech was a public version of the speech that Nikita Khrushchev made in 1956, the so-called secret speech.
My God, you're old.
I wasn't there for it, to members of the Soviet Communist Party, where he said, it's time for us to be honest. We've got to be honest about what's been going on here over the last 15 years. It was a turning point then in the history of that part of the world. And Joe Biden, I think, is hoping that this address will be a turning point in this part of the world. I mean, one vignette, regular listeners of the Eddie Mayer program, and who wouldn't be one, that a couple of weeks ago, in the aftermath of the attack on the Capitol, I told you that I had had a text from a friend of mine in Texas,
yes,
not in any sense a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat or Republican, a political independent, who sent me a text at the time, if I just scroll up to it, saying, I am glad my mother is not alive to see what's happening in Washington, D.C. today. And I explained on the air that I knew his mother. She was a God-loving Christian. She made the most remarkable apple pies. And she firmly believed in the power of America's example. Today, he's texted me again, just within the last half an hour, to say, I wish my mum was alive for this. And that, I think, gives you a sense that in the homes of some Americans, there is a real sense that this is a turning point. But also, there is an acknowledgement that Joe Biden's going to have his work cut out for him, bringing this country back to its moorings.
A brief word about the man he succeeded. He had some remarks today before he flew off into civilian life. He spent quite a long time talking about how well the stock market has done, and then belatedly turned to COVID, which, of course, he said would be gone by now. What did you make of his final remarks as president?
Well, I think the important thing to note is that he was supposed to be making a prepared speech, and teleprompters had been set up for him at Andrews Air Force Base for him to use. There was a script that had been prepared for delivery, and we're told that there were gracious moments within it in which he was specifically by name going to recognize Joe Biden as the country's incoming president and wish him success. As Marine One was on its way to Andrews Air Force Base, the Air Force Base was told to take the teleprompters down. He had decided once again, as he's decided on so many occasions over the last 4 years, to wing it. And in winging it, presumably deliberately, he decided that he wasn't going to, by name, congratulate Joe Biden, although he did express the view that he has created the foundations, particularly economically, for the success that Joe Biden can now begin to enjoy, although he did say to the crowd at one point, I hope he doesn't raise your taxes, but if he does, don't come after me and, I told you so. I told you there was a threat of that. It was a moment when the vast majority of American politicians would have made a brief set-piece speech, but that's not who he is. And so, flanked as he was by members of his family, Ivanka Trump weeping openly as the final moments of the Trump presidency played out before her, it was once again a muscular defense of his time in power, with no reference whatsoever to the events of 2 weeks ago. I'm told that after he landed in Florida, reporters again asked him whether he had any regrets over what had occurred 2 weeks ago. He ignored those questions as he departed the airfield and headed to Mar-a-Lago. He's a man who definitely thinks he's still got a future here, and not the future that we know he's got here immediately, which is to deal with his impeachment trial in the US Senate. He has still the support of a substantial number of congressmen within the House of Representatives, and possibly a handful of Republican senators. So were he decide to form a political party, the Patriot Party, and truly go for a third party approach to American politics, he could potentially still be a potent force here. But he's going to have to get through the impeachment trial. He's going to have to get through all the criminal investigations of his business activities and other activities that lie ahead. As we reported yesterday, Nancy Pelosi is talking about creating a government commission to try and understand why precisely for the last 4 years he has been so beguiled by President Vladimir Putin of Russia. And also, I think he's going to have to contend with the fact that, you know, rapidly here today, time has moved on. Power has quite literally ebbed from his fingertips. He's no longer got the nuclear briefcase. That's now with Joe Biden. He's no longer got a platform because he's managed to find himself in a position where he's banned from Twitter and banned from Facebook, the architect of his own demise in that regard. And he's going to be existing in a country where the president and the government will no longer have any truck with that extraordinary notion of alternative facts. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how that all plays out.
Simon, thank you so much as always. Simon Marks in Washington. In a moment, a former UK ambassador to the US, and Stephanie Winston-Wolkoff, who was senior advisor to Melania Trump. That just ahead after the headlines from Thomas Watts.